Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How many of you know who Ado Roshi is? Well, my friend Alan, who a lot of you have met over the years, been here to speak a couple of times, just sent me an email recently, which was an article. I've forgotten the name of the magazine, but it was basically the story of Ado, who was from Japan, who was a student of Soen Roshi, who was a famous Japanese Zen master, and Ado's trip to where he eventually, as a young man, wound up in the United States, and ultimately his fall from grace. When Ado was probably in his 20s, he came to, eventually wound up in New York City. He had been to several other places. And I don't remember in the story exactly how he found a place to stay, but he was staying somewhere. Somebody took him in. And every day he would do Kin Hin in New York City. And he claims to have walked all over New York City over the next couple of years. And by walking, he would attract the attention of various people on the street, whether it was the business district or the village or the Upper East Side or Harlem, wherever he walked. He would attract attention because he was walking with full robes on. And so eventually, and Ado was a very charismatic Zen teacher. In fact, my friend Dennis, who has also been here, used to do month-long retreats up at Daibosatsu Zendo in New York State. And he always tells this story of one afternoon, Ado was giving a teisho. And two birds flew in through an open window in the Zendo, and they sat on the lectern while he gave his teisho. So he was a very charismatic guy. And he developed quite a following just by doing Kin Hin. And eventually he attracted students like Peter Matheson, the famous writer, and several very wealthy people became his students and his sponsors. So he formed a Zendo in New York City, and this, apparently I've never been there, but this fabulous place up in New York State, where they actually brought carpenters from Japan to recreate a temple like existed in Japan up in the mountains. Ado had, now he's a Roshi, right? He's been given Dharma transmission and all that, and he becomes one of the more renowned Zen teachers in the United States who came from the East. This was back in the late 60s when he came here, and all this happened and it unfolded, and he developed all of this financial support and had these very realistic Zendos, the Zen Center in New York, and then the Zen Center up in the, you know, monastery up in the Catskills. I remember when I first entered into Zen back in the late 60s, my friend Dennis, who would tell the story about the birds coming and sitting on the lectern while Ado was giving a talk, introduced me to Zen. And I went into New York, and I went to, I forget what it was called, the actual name of it, but Ado Roshi's Zendo. And I went, the first time I ever did Daisan with Ado Roshi, the first time I ever did Daisan was with Ado Roshi. So he was the first person. So you go, you know, into a room, a separate room outside the Zendo, down a hallway. And here's this very charismatic, very, it's hard to describe the energy of somebody who has spent most of their life sitting, you know, for months at a time, etc. It's a very powerful energy. And I remember coming back after the Daisan, I have no idea if I said anything or he said anything, but I had a word in my head, and that was psychopath. And it was weird to me. Now, of course, I was a kid. I was young at the time, 20 years old or whatever. Here's this famous Zen master, and the best that I could do after meeting face-to-face with him in private was to have this terrible feeling in my body and the word psychopath in my head. So this article that was sent to me, of course, is the story of Ado Roshi and the way in which he abused women as a Zen teacher over a long period of time. and how he has consistently denied it in the face of all sorts of evidence. So it raises a lot of questions, a lot of things that I think as people who participate in the Zen community, both men and women, we should discuss, or it should at least be put out there. I think we all know that the Japanese culture is a male-dominated culture, and the same is true for Zen practice, although it has changed considerably in the United States. In the West, there are many more female, many more women Zen teachers. And as I've mentioned too in the past, really, the only Zen teacher that I know of in the history of Zen practice, Chinese and Japanese, Dogen Zenji was the only one who looked at men and women as being equals. But back to Edo Roshi. The one thing about this was, in this article, was he had a very keen radar for women who were vulnerable, women who had sexual abuse histories, trauma histories, and he would prey on them. And because he had such esteem, and because he was a Roshi, and because he had this incredible energy, he could take advantage of that. So I guess the first thing that I want to say is that because somebody has the name teacher, because they have the name sensei or the name Roshi, doesn't make them any more human than the rest of us. I'm sorry, I'm smiling because, not because this is funny at all, but because I say H-U-M-A-N as human. I don't pronounce the H, for which my wife constantly teases me. So, you know, so there's a cultural factor that takes place here, which is that culturally, my experience, my knowledge, tells me that both China and Japan placed men far above women in their value in those cultures, particularly in the spiritual realm, which I'm more familiar with. You don't read very often about anybody of renown in the spiritual realm that's a female, which is an obvious problem. And then you have a guy who winds up being a teacher. I don't know if he's enlightened or not. Having charisma doesn't mean necessarily that you're enlightened. But he was made a teacher in a male-dominated system and then came to this culture and was elevated to a stature that allowed him to take advantage in this way. And for a long time, people looked the other way. And so part of what I want to say is, whether it's here or it's anywhere, don't look the other way. And I don't think that will happen anymore. I think there are too many women teachers now, and the conscious level is too high. But I think it needs to be said that just because somebody carries the name teacher doesn't make them special. They're no better than anybody else as human beings. Now, it's confusing, though, because it's, you know, not so much for me anymore, but in the beginning it was confusing to me, because how can you be enlightened and behave this way? And I think the way that that gets explained is that we have allowed ourselves to believe that enlightenment is something that it's not. So, you know, there's the Heart Sutra, which talks about form and emptiness. And another way to name those two things is emptiness would be what we call wisdom. And wisdom is something that we have to experience. It's not something that, you know, I could give you long definition and discussion about what wisdom is. But wisdom is what occurs. It's an experience that occurs when the mind becomes still, when it's empty, empty of concepts, empty of names. And we just have just that direct experience of being. And then form is the other side of the same coin. It's all the differentiation that exists. So we have to use that wisdom to be complete as human beings, as spiritual beings. It's not enough to see the true nature of things, that things are empty, including me, that there really isn't a Carl in a sense. You know, there's one way to look at reality, and there's no Carl. There's no Jeff. There's no individual person. It's just one thing. It's just oneness. But at the very same time, this is the trick. This is the thing that's hard to catch. It's all these different things. It's all these individual manifestations. So wisdom, when you experience wisdom and all these barriers, all these ideas drop away, you experience what Bernie, and I've used this analogy so many times now, talks about as the one body, right? So I have hand, I have a head, I have a chest, I have legs, I have feet, I have fingers, nose, eyes, ears, but I am one body. All this variation, yet I am one body. And so when I reside in a place of one body, and I have this experience, I experience that. Not just an idea like I'm conveying to you, but I experience the truth of that gradually over time. It's not necessarily one experience. They build on each other. You keep opening and opening. And so after a while, the natural way to express that is compassion, right? So if I hurt my left hand, my right hand just comes and takes care of it. If I function in the world and Jim is hurt, I pay attention to him because he's me. He's no different than me. That's the other side of the coin, that he's different than me. But I also know, because I've had these experiences that meditation leads to, that he is me. And that part, that's expressing the wisdom in action called compassion. However, it is possible to have this insight and to be wounded in a variety of ways psychologically. Mostly it's usually due to early life trauma. It could also be due to any other kinds of traumas, being involved in wars, having experiences that are beyond the comprehension of the human mind. But we carry this stuff in us, and it gets in the way of expressing wisdom. And so I don't call Eido Roshi a psychopath because I lack compassion for him. I call him a psychopath because I think that's what he is. He was a very, very damaged person who, for a variety of cultural and social reasons, and I don't doubt that maybe he did have insight, but he was unable to express it. He was unable to actualize that insight. So he had no compassion for women, certainly. And I don't know about anybody else. So in order to be complete as human beings, we have to actualize ourselves spiritually, and we have to actualize ourselves or heal ourselves psychologically. And this work has to be done simultaneously. And a lot of people come to spiritual practices thinking that if they can only become enlightened, they will be complete. And I can tell you from my own personal experience that that's not true. You have to do your psychological work also. The other side of this, which I think I've mentioned in the past, is sometimes if you haven't done your psychological work, it's impossible to attain wisdom because the psychological stuff gets in the way. And I'll give you two quick examples of this. And I think this one I've used before, but I had an abusive childhood. And one of the ways that, when you're kids, you don't have a suitcase under the bed packed in case you don't like it where you can move on. You have no place to go. You have to stay there. So what do? We adapt. We find ways to adapt the best we can to the circumstances that we're dealt. And in my case, it was not safe to be vulnerable. So I built a wall, a psychological wall. I was functioned behind a wall. There was no way that I was going to, it wasn't so intellectual like this, I was a kid. But by the time I was 8 years old, I was very well defended. And there was no way that I was going to be vulnerable. So what does that have to do with sitting? Fast forward. And now I'm at a week-long retreat. And all of a sudden, the sense of who I am starts dropping away, and I start becoming incredibly vulnerable, incredibly open. Well, this is a place that I know is not safe. It was terrifying. And so I left the retreat. I couldn't stay. Fortunately, by that point in my life, I had become a therapist. No surprise. Part of becoming a therapist was trying to figure this out. How do I understand all these experiences that I have, or the way that I am? And so I realized, okay, if I'm this terrified by vulnerableness, there's something wrong. So I had to take care of that. And it wasn't until I went and took care of that, or at least to a certain degree took care of it, that I could go back and practice and allow myself to become vulnerable, which means to go deeper. Because that was a barrier that I had to take care of. The other side of it is, another adaptation was that I became needless and wantless. You know, my father used to put his finger in my face and say, "You have nothing to say here. You'll get what we give you." So the way that I adapted that was, I don't need anything from you people. I don't want anything from you people. But then as I become an adult, how do I receive people's compassion? You know, compassion is a two-way street. It's not just me providing compassion, but there's somebody who's willing to receive it that can use that compassion to grow or to be safe. So there's this crazy mishigas of stuff that sitting on a cushion doesn't just erase. And that's why if you look at the history of Zen in America, there have been all these teachers who have done these terrible things. And you say, and I guess part of this for me in having this talk is, don't lose faith in the practice. The practice is wonderful, but it has its limitations. Don't lose faith in teachers, but they have their limitations. They're human like you and me. There's nothing special because somebody has these titles. But if they're reasonably functioning as psychological human beings, they can give you direction. They can lead you in a place where you can experience the world in a very unique way that we're not normally used to experiencing. And it's very beautiful, and it's a way of completing ourselves. You know, I know people that know nothing about meditation, who I do trauma work as a therapist, who have healed themselves in tremendous ways and become much more compassionate and feeling much more connected to the world around them. But that sort of awakening, that psychological awakening and that psychological healing, is stats limited also. It's not the same thing as having insight. So the two things have to be put together. And if they're not, we end up with people like Edo Roshi. When you're out in the world and you're pursuing spirituality, my advice would be, if I can give you my advice, don't be naive and don't be unrealistic. And keep a healthy skepticism. Because everybody involved in spiritual practice is human. Everybody has shortcomings. And you have to use your own wisdom to select somebody that you can be safe with to take this journey.